So, coming up first to the stage in this half, this gentleman runs his own video production company, Smart Yeti Studios. He also, I'm not saying that, you know, my friends and I have a super secret Magic the Gathering League that we have a Facebook group for and everything, but if we did, this man might be the commissioner of it, taking over from myself and Chris Geiger. Please welcome Jeremy Connie.
Hypothetically,
we drafted last night.
Yeah,
I got those sweet dinosaurs, baby.
If people have fun playing Magic, that's all right. thank you, Eric. So, in the ripe blossoming age of post college, 23, 24 of my life, when I almost had a fully formed brain. I decided to go on a spelunking trip. And I... For those of you who don't know what spelunking is, it's when you go into a cave that is not commercially renovated. There's no stairs. It's just ground. It's dirt. You're going into a cave. And I remember when I told someone about this at the time, they said, oh, great. You're going to have a fantastic time. You know what you should do before you go? You should watch the movie The Descent. And I said, no, absolutely not, but thank you for the suggestion. We did have a great time. It was a cave in southern Indiana that happened to be on private land, so all you had to do to get into this cave that was not renovated, not built up in any way, no supervision, no whatsoever, is sign a waiver at the entrance to the cave saying, we won't sue you. I assume that's what it said. I didn't really read it. So me and a group of about eight or so college friends got together to go camp outside the cave, go in during the day, and explore. And it was really fun. Up until that point, I had only been in things like Mammoth Cave, where there are stairs, there's lights, you get to see big stalactites, and there's someone guiding you, even though you don't need any guidance. There's a path. It's going to be fine. But I've always wanted to go spelunking, so that's why I wanted to go on this trip. I wanted to be in a cave that was unfurnished, that, you know, was like what we went through, which the beginning of the cave is nice and open. Then you get to parts that maybe you're crawling on your belly, single file, to get through, because that's all you can fit, is a body width and body height. To get through some of these places. And then the cave that we're in, at least, it would open up into giant caverns where, you know, the headlamps that we were looking at with couldn't light the whole room. And like any time that one might go spelunking, you have a moment where you shut off all the lights and look at the environment that you're in that is completely devoid of light. You're alone, and this is so different than our usual lifetime where we're, you know, constantly in light. It's kind of magical and was really fun to experience. We had one of those moments, and, you know, we kept going further. We had packed a couple of snacks because we didn't know how long we were going to be along for the trip. And we continued on to the point where we got tired and we're like, okay, let's head back. This has been fun. Then we turned back and realized, things look different this way. Did we turn left at that unrecognizable sort of rock that's distinctly the same as that rock? We got lost. About 2 hours underground, we were lost. And that was a really scary moment of, you know, I was with seven other people, and I was probably the least panicked. One of the few that were not as panicked as other people. Everybody else was very much of the, we're going to die. Down here, which is absolutely could have been a possibility for this trip, and that we were, you know, we I learned a lot of things about spelunking on this trip. It's just that they happened afterwards. Like, it's a smart idea to have things mark your path of travel. You're in an unrecognizable piece of rock and dirt. You know, if you're choosing to go a direction, as will happen in a non-commercialized cave, it's good to either put reflective tape up or maybe, you know, stack some pebbles in an arrow that says, hey, you came from this direction. We didn't do that. So we had to figure out what to do next. What preceded was about 30 to 45 minutes of us worrying a lot and trying out different directions. We, in fact, had one of those movie moments where we had gone away from where we realized we were lost, that wonderful moment, that area that we all worried for a second, and we traveled and we made choices to try and figure out where we were and where how to get back, and then suddenly we were back where we first were. And that was the second sinking feeling of not only did we not know where we were, we tried and we just got back to the same place that we realized we were before. And the way that the cave was sort of laid out in my mind is I remember the landmarks of it. The beginning of the cave is full of foliage and, you know, water and life because it's still at the edge of the cave. You have a lot of the outside world creeping in. That goes away fairly fast. The other landmarks that stayed along the way much farther in was the graffiti. As people wandered in, they wanted to make a mark on the cave, so they would make graffiti. And that, I remember that very distinctly because it lasted much longer than the foliage. There's also one other landmark that we found that was surprising. Before the graffiti died out, but after the foliage did, there was a single bat that was hanging on the side of the cave. That was way past any other wildlife that we had seen in the cave. All the bugs had started not being present anymore, and it was just rock and dirt and water, and then a bat. And no matter how much we made noise or walked past it or talked about it or moved as close to it, it didn't move. Not a single inch. And then we were all fascinated by it on the way in before we got, you know, worried about our lives. And that was the landmark that I knew I would be okay with, or I knew I would be okay in this journey after we had been making our way out. We had seen some graffiti along the way after we had started making choices again and finding our way out, but we got lost again. And it wasn't until we saw this bat that we all felt like we were going to be fine, that we're going to get out of this cave, because, you know, up until that point we started worrying about, oh, we didn't bring a lot of food, a lot of water. We don't know how long we're going to be in here. But we, as you can tell, we all made it out. And things were fine. And but that experience of the possibility of not making it back alive changed how I viewed decisions and my life moving forward. It changed my perspective. Not that I don't take risks anymore or I'm averse to risk, but I spend a bit more time realizing and educating myself about what the possible downsides could be. And you might be happy to know that in the years after that trip, I did get to go back on another trip to that cave in southern Indiana, this time with reflective tape.
Jeremy Conning, everybody. That was, like, legitimately scary, right? Like, even though obviously Jeremy made it out alive, I mean, I just want to point out, we don't really know that your seven friends did. Like, we don't have visual proof.
And you never will.
Just your word. Exactly right. You guys ever read that book, House of Leaves?
It's really good.
Yeah, it's really... I couldn't... Like, I just read it. Shout out to Ben Rather, our favorite listener, who who let me borrow it this summer. I couldn't read it at night. Like, it's super scary. It's about, like, this labyrinth in the basement of a house. I don't know. It's really good. I would check it.